And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, we had another important political week this last week. On the one hand, we continued to be affected by the failure of the Trump administration to handle COVID-19. We had another 2 million people thrown out of work. We had our deaths now have reached over 100,000 in the last couple of months. Deaths in the African-American population from COVID-19 are 6 times greater than among American white population. And, of course, we had the horrible police brutality in Minneapolis, which has caused rioting all over America in protest against the racism that seems never to end and which the police forces seem to be the unfortunate lead example of, the most public example of, as they killed this guy, this cop killed this guy while he was being filmed, doing it. And that sparked anti-racist uprisings everywhere. The Trump administration is a comprehensive failure.
Well, this is their version of making America great again.
Yeah.
These are the things that America's never seen. The greatest number of unemployed in the shortest amount of time ever. The drop off that's resulted in consumer spending, which was the greatest drop off in ever.
16% decline in 1 month.
Yes. A little bit over 16%. You mentioned that the police brutality of what happened in Minneapolis that we have seen before. We saw it in New York, where a black man said he couldn't breathe, and the cops kept him down. And this is the situation. We've seen a repetition of that. And, we now have, that we never had in many years ago, was the ability to see these things as they were happening, because we've got cameras that are ubiquitous all over the place. People have them on the street, and they can film what's going on in a public place. The police have no right to block that unless it interferes with their actual duties.
Yeah, but they do it anyway. Look, they arrested a CNN crew.
And the
crew said to them, to the cops, "Where should we go? So we're not in your way." And they arrested them.
Well, they're the enemy of the people.
Yeah.
There are reports that there were shots fired at a local news crew in Louisville, Kentucky. We had the attack on CNN headquarters in Atlanta, although that also happened to be a police precinct house in that building. We had a Fox crew that was driven, I guess, off the air by chance of the public with expletives on it. But of course, this also comes down to the fact that Donald Trump has called the free press the enemy of the people.
And called the Nazis very good people.
Yeah.
And said about the demonstrators that he had the most vicious dogs imaginable available and ready to sick onto them. Wouldn't that have been phenomenal? The Bull Connor days come to life again.
Yeah.
Bull Connor was the famous police chief in Alabama who unleashed police dogs on children when they were demonstrating.
Of course, that backfired because the images in America of those dogs on kids and on peaceful demonstrators were horrific to most Americans, most thinking Americans anyway. He's repeated some of the sayings of the police chief in Miami about when the looting begins, the shooting starts.
right.
Things like that that he's picked up over the years. I mean, he's a man that lives in the late 50s, early 60s. That's where his formative years seem to be in terms of intellect, and things have frozen in time for him in that regard. For America, this is not great news. This is bad news, inflaming the situations that we've had in major cities. And the thing we don't know is what the repercussions are going to be, this being an election year. We know this sounds a lot like 1968. And, in that year, with all of the race riots after the assassination of Martin Luther King, and then later the riots at the Chicago National Convention, those things worked against the Democrats. Now the party in power is Donald Trump and the Republicans. So you wonder, if that's going to work against him, or if he can again find some way to mobilize the white power type of movement that's part of his base.
There's a big difference you say the Democrats suffered because of the anti-racist rebellions in the 60s, but the Democrats held themselves out as being anti-racist, as being friends of integration. The Republicans, and Trump especially, hold themselves out as being the defenders of white supremacy. So it's a very different situation. He is an unabashed racist. His claim is that he is going to make the world safe for white supremacy. That's what he wants to do. That's what Make America Great Again means. So I don't think that the Republicans will gain as a result of these rebellions. I'm sure that it will help him to bring some of his people to the polls. But by rights, it ought to wake up more people who are not racist, that the Republicans have no way to tackle systemic racism in America. And without tackling systemic racism in America, there is no American democracy. You can't have a good life in America.
No. And we're just going to have to see. A lot of people are commenting, white and black, and people who are really, even in law enforcement, and people who say that, look, I'm a conservative, but what I saw happen in Minneapolis with the police is just intolerable, and it cannot be, and it should not be defended. There's still things that are going to come out in regard to that, but we're seeing. You said that Trump is hoping that this will gin up his base. That's their campaign strategy. They don't think they got everyone out last time. I mentioned, I think, last week that at their rallies they take names and contact information, and they think they have a database of 110 million people. If they can get 70 million of those out, they think they can win the election. We don't know. That's the big unknown. But also whether or not there are going to be more people defecting from the Republicans that voted last time. Certainly, we're starting to see that in polling on the Senate races, where the Republicans thought they had a lock this time on retaining control of the Senate, that even though they had more people up, they thought they were going to, it was in places that we're going to be able to retain their seats, and things are falling apart for them. If you look at some of the individual state polls, Arizona, Colorado, tremendously falling apart for them. North Carolina, they're not doing well. They're they're going to have problems in Maine. Montana is now a problem for them. So, we're going to have to see exactly how that plays out on the down ballot issues that are going to come up in this election.
And never mind the down ballot. What do you think the rebellions, which I call them rebellions, are going to do for Amy Klobuchar's chances of being the vice president?
I think it's pretty well damaged to the extent where it's beyond repair. I have been one that thought that she was looking to run for vice president all along, and that she had a pathway at least an argument that she could help carry the Midwest states. And I think that's all gone. The scrutiny of her record previously in dealing with the police has become more intense. That was a fairly minor part of what happened during the primaries, the scrutiny. Now it would be a major part. I think that she's pretty well done in that regard. I had also a few weeks ago thought that Whitmire may have jumped ahead of her in terms of the governor of Michigan of having the same argument that Klobuchar could have. And Whitmire, don't forget, was asked by the Democrats to deliver the response to the State of the Union address. But she got bloodied up a little bit with the rebellion in her state to open it up. And then her husband created a problem for her last week when he tried to contravene her orders and go out on a lake with a boat. And then when he was confronted, kind of brought up the fact that he was the husband of the governor. So, things are looking better for somebody like Kamala Harris. We still hear that Elizabeth Warren is in the picture because of her liberal tendencies. There was an article written in Politico about why she would be the best choice, unifying both parts of the parties. You still have to remember that in many respects, people don't vote for vice president. They vote for president. But it gets scrutiny. You know, bad vice presidential picks never hurt. They didn't hurt George Bush when he picked Dan Quayle. They didn't hurt his son when he picked Dick Cheney. They didn't really hurt Donald Trump when he picked Mike Pence. So, those things you have to view it. And it may be just one of those things that could hurt the Democrats more than they hurt Republicans in terms of picks.
Well, I think that if he picks Klobuchar, he can't get elected. I think that's a losing ticket.
Yeah.
It's just that simple. And I think, on the other hand, if he comes out, Biden that is, with a pitch that says we have to unify, but rather a pitch that we have to defeat the racists, that's a winning line. That's a line that can inspire people to... Because after all, the rebellions exist because the people who are rebelling have lost confidence in the political system, in the electoral system. They've lost confidence in the judicial structures of the country. None of it works for them. The politicians don't do anything for them. The judges and the courts don't do anything for them. They have no way to be heard. They have no way to have any effect. They have to do something. Now, if it's the rebellion against the electoral system, then Biden has to come out and say something like, I have a way of working with you. I have a way that if you will join my system and give up your rebellion, we can achieve a victory against racism, a victory against inequality, a victory against all the horrible accumulation of that the oppressions of the past has brought to your community. If he doesn't do something like that, I don't think he brings the voters out that he needs to bring out. And Trump wins.
Well, we'll see. I mean, Biden's been emerging more from his seclusion, his self-imposed quarantine down in the basement. He's been doing more appearances. The last set I saw, he was out. He was looking out on his backyard, a better setting. It was a sunny day. It just had more appeal. And he'd been taking advantage of things more. I mean, he called the Floyd family before the president ever got around to doing it.
Well, the president might never get around to doing it. You know, did he call the Floyd family ever? Has he yet?
He said he did. Ah. I'm sure that the content of the talk had was nowhere near what they got from former Vice President Biden, who seems to be able to really connect with people on that. That's his strong point. So, we're going to have to see where that goes. And, and as far as getting people out, we have this big issue about write-in ballots and absentee ballots that continues to boil over and roil over. The Republicans, Trump has taken the position that it's bad for Republicans. And traditionally, the Republicans have taken the position that higher turnout that way is bad for them. I keep referring to Paul Weyrich back in the late 70s making that statement. And, of course, the Republicans have tried to have voter suppression. But it in some states, in some places, it works for the Republicans. Utah, it works for them. It worked for them just recently in California, where that open seat Katie Hill had to abandon. Her successor was elected a guy named Mike Garcia, who was a Republican, and they did it better on absentee ballots. So it varies from place to place. Although the Republicans are still trying suppression, that they don't want people who might not normally come out to be sent absentee ballot applications. Places like the inner cities, they've been working against that stuff. You know, the Democrats in Pennsylvania set a goal of getting, in the primary, 1 million absentee voters, absentee ballots. And the latest toll I understand, I was on a conference call on Friday, that the Democrats have now gotten 1.3 million absentee votes sent in by mail in Pennsylvania. The Republicans have less than half of that, about 560,000 votes. So at least in the Pennsylvania is a key state, it's working. By the way, I don't know if you saw something down in Florida, we've talked about this, where the voters on the ballot voted to allow convicted felons, once they finish their term, to come back and vote. And then the Republican legislature tried to pass a bill, and I think they were successful in it, passing a bill that said that wasn't good enough, that if they had outstanding fines, that they had to be paid before they could vote. Well, a judge this week ruled that that's a poll tax, and that couldn't happen. So the Democrats may have several hundred thousand more people on the rolls down in Florida.
I know that people think that the people, former incarcerated people, will come out and tend to vote liberal, but we all know that the strongest organized groups in the prisons are the white supremacist groups. And although there may be a lot of incarcerated African Americans far beyond their percentage of the population, nonetheless, the white population in the prisons is the majority. So if 800,000 people from Florida, formerly convicts, now get the right to vote, why should anybody imagine that that's a liberal block of voters, when in prison they belong to the Aryan Nation?
Well, we'll find out. But obviously, the Republicans thought that they didn't want people to vote. So,
well, the Republicans, don't forget, are hobbled by the Koch libertarian ideology that says that people will vote their interests. People are logical, and they will vote their interests. And if working people vote their interests, they will vote against the interests of corporations. Therefore, don't let them vote. That's the whole theory. That's all that it is. They don't even make any bones about it, the Koch libertarians. But what if they're not right? What if they're wrong? What if people are not logical? What if people are really susceptible to right-wing propaganda, to culture wars propaganda, to racist propaganda, to propaganda that says, no, you got to being against abortion is the most important thing, then they won't vote in their own interest. They'll vote against their own interest.
Well, that's not a what if. That's been happening.
Exactly.
That's Richard Nixon's Southern strategy. That was the strategy of Ronald Reagan going to Philadelphia, Mississippi, and talking about states' rights. That was the strategy of Lee Atwater. That was the strategy of the George Bush's campaign with what's his name, the criminal, the revolving door of the criminal used against Mike Dukakis. This is, and they've been successful in getting people to vote against their interests because they.
I know that, but many liberals feel that people's identity determines how they vote. Oh, we'll get women to vote, we'll have a liberal voting bloc. We'll get African Americans to vote, we'll have a liberal voting bloc, and so forth. It doesn't work that way. It really doesn't work that way. Ideas, as you always say, ideas matter. People do what they think is right, for whatever the reason is that they think is right. And if the liberal side, doesn't engage in the fight for ideas, doesn't engage in the fight to win people to the idea that you really are part of a community. You can't be an individual unless you're in the community, unless you have collective membership. Unless you fight racism, unless you fight against anti-immigrant prejudice, you can't realize yourself even as a white person. If you don't have those struggles, those ideological struggles, why would you imagine that the liberal side will win? Because the right wing, they do carry out an ideological struggle. They got an answer. They tell you Mexicans are ruining your life, Chinese are killing you, and so forth and so on.
That's what they've been running on it. And
yeah.
Then they have the thing that you know, it's all up to the individual freedom. That, as you said, they attack the community. You know, Hillary Clinton had "It Takes a Village," and they attack that kind of village that everybody is on their own. The Margaret Thatcher, that there's no such thing as society.
Yeah, but you know, the fact that they're hypocritical, the fact that they're illogical is almost unimportant. I mean, individual. You speak English, or you speak French, or you speak whatever you speak. You didn't invent it. You were raised in it. You were taught it. It's a collective possession, the language that you speak. You can't think without speaking a language. Humans just can't. You think in language. Well, in other words, as an individual, you can't think individually without the collective input, the language. That's just one small example. You can only develop your individuality within the social group. That's how humans are. That's how we develop. That's why we're not wolves. We're humans.
Well, yeah, but you talk about some of the individual groups, but we've seen some of those groups rebel against Donald Trump from right on. The women, particularly suburban women, and it's getting worse and worse for him.
He has no, but it's not women. It's some women. But there's women who defend him. You look at the pictures of the rallies. There's plenty of women in those pictures.
Well, you know, we have the Kellyanne Conways and his press secretary. By the way, Kellyanne Conway, I think last time voted by absentee ballot. His press secretary has voted 10 or 11 times by absentee ballot.
Donald Trump votes by absentee ballot.
Right. But, you know, those contradictions don't seem to matter to the base. But what matters is if you get to people's core, and it's been getting to people's core. If you look at the polling, the seniors that went heavily for Trump last time, they're not doing that this time. Significant drop off there, because they understand that they're the ones that have been dying of this virus, and his policies have been kind of contrary to their interests. Sort of like, well, the old people, if they have to die for the sake of the economy, so be it.
That's exactly what he said in so many words, right?
Yeah, that's what they said down in Texas, the lieutenant governor in Texas. Yeah.
But the economy only exists in order to have people live. It's a way to live. There's nothing. The economy is the word that describes how we reproduce our lives, how we produce what we need to stay alive, how we distribute what we need to stay alive. It's preposterous to say that we should die in the effort to stay alive. That's just ridiculous. So, and that's what the Republicans are saying.
You know, in Pennsylvania, the Republicans were, you know, they're attacking Wolf. They want to open up the state, and that state legislature met to try to overturn or overrule him on the way he had closed things down. It turns out that one of their own was actually infected by the virus, and they knew it, and they didn't tell anybody else about that.
Wait a minute. Say that again. One of the Republican legislators was infected. The Republican leadership knew it, and they kept holding meetings with him and others?
Yes. Yes. And that's, at least in Harrisburg, that's become a big scandal. And it hasn't seemed to permeate a lot throughout the state. And that part of that's the fault of the Democrats. Part of it's the fact that they don't have this big echo machine of Rush Limbaugh and Fox News and what have you. And part of it is the fact that there have been so many other large news items this week from day to day that they can't even... It can't even break through when it's compared to the loss of millions of jobs or the killing in Minneapolis, things like that. But, yeah, that's what happened down there. And by the way, in Harrisburg, they did pass a budget, but it's only an interim budget. They're going to have to come back in the fall It's a 25. Well, I think it's a $25 billion interim budget, and they don't know what the revenues are going to be until, and won't have an estimate until the fall. So that's going to be create all sorts of interesting scenarios when they come back. When you may have people who are lame ducks wanting to pass legislation or not caring about what goes through, it's a dangerous time down there. But we'll have to cover that when that occurs. And we,
well, of course,
you know,
you can't expect that the Republican leadership is going to do anything to bail out the states. From their viewpoint, there's no reason to do so, especially not states that have Democratic majorities.
Well, you're going to have to see how well that holds up when the rubber hits the road. And Mitch McConnell runs into some problems there trying to pull that thing. The Republicans have caved in on almost every single thing so far. And, you know, in terms of spending and budgeting, they talk a tough game. But when the reality hits them and they understand, they know that there's people out there that if they leave them hanging, so to speak, that they're going to lose them. They're going to lose them, even supporters.
But some of the Republicans have an eye out for what's happening. Lindsey Graham, you remember, this week sent out a letter to all older federal judges calling on them to resign immediately so that the Republicans, before the end of the election term, can reappoint newer reactionary Republican judges. They're taking no chances on Trump losing.
Yeah, and that, remember, that was part of Trump's messaging the last time. And the Democrats have let this thing go for years and years and years. The Republicans knew that if they could lock in the judicial branch, that even if certain things went through the legislature, that they could control whether they were held constitutional or not constitutional and what have you. And Trump went out there and he said to the pro-life forces, I'm going to appoint what he calls pro-life judges. Actually, they're anti-abortion judges. On other matters of life and death, they're not so pro-life. And he's kept to his word on that thing. They're also very anti-regulation. They're also very pro, you know, business and willing to turn the other way on corruption of businesses. And as I've said, there's four justices on the Supreme Court that were appointed by Republicans who did not win the majority of the vote. And they want to lock, as you said,
the
they want to lock.
The people who, the presidents who appointed them were minority presidents, minority vote presidents.
Yeah. This week, late in the week, the Supreme Court had a 5-4 decision where Roberts, who was one of those judges, went along with the liberals and said that no, churches don't get any special exemption if the state treats everybody the same, that they can be shut down or can be limited in how many people at one time can be in a church.
And that's part of it, because these fundamentalist organizers, their idea is that Christianity should be established as a state religion. They say it openly, and their arguments in this case were that they should be allowed rights that commercial establishments shouldn't have, because religion has a constitutional special place in American life. I thought we were a secular state, that there was no establishment of religion.
Well, that's true. And as some pundit noted, you know, the Supreme Court has a special place in American life, in the Constitution, Article 3. But the justices there were sequestered. They couldn't meet together. So, Roberts going along with the liberals, at least held for this point. I don't know what – there's going to be a bunch of decisions coming down in the next month.
Next week we've got a big week coming up, because these demonstrations throughout the country may continue. We don't know what's going to happen, but it's going to be an important week. So I'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week, Jay.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.